Now, I know I'm not perfect. That's okay. I know a couple of you that aren't either. It's hard to say that, not look around anywhere. It's hard to say that, not look around anywhere. Paul, what a masterpiece he was when God worked through him. Paul came to a place where he was happy with his faults, content, even delighted in his insufficiencies, because he understood that his life was not his own. He understood that the weaker he was, the more God could do through him. Not for him, but through him. Giving him the strength, the wisdom, insight, discernment, understanding, so that he could do God's will. That little phrase that Dave mentioned, "My grace is enough or sufficient to cover and sustain you. My power is made perfect in weakness." I want to spend a little bit of time looking at that, just that one sentence. My grace is enough, sufficient, all that's required. No lack to cover. What does cover mean? It's like something over. Something that shelters. Something that we're enveloped by. A covering. And to sustain. That's like lifting up and to encourage and to support. You get the sense that this grace is all around us, all encompassing. It's before us, it's behind us, it's above us, it's under us. My power, God says, my power is made perfect in weakness. We're going to come back to that in a minute. Where we have come from should be an advantage. As we crawl out from under the rock of law and are excited to see that we stand by grace, only by grace. We always did stand by grace, but we never really grasped that concept. We never really grasped the significance of what to stand by grace means, and largely still don't. Which is why we're talking about it today, and we've got a whole 15 minutes each. Jesus came to bring us the good news. But first, the bad news. The bad news is it's not the things that we've been doing that are wrong. It's that we're wrong. And we can't fix that, no matter how many laws we keep. The good news is that he fixed it. So long as we're with him, we'll be okay. There's a catch that's been doing the rounds since the church began. Not our church, the church. And it's about grace. When we've got grace, we don't need to keep the law. We can lower the standards of everything and just cruise along on grace. Grace will cover it. Grace is everywhere. But Jesus spent considerable time outlining the way to live through a thing called the Sermon on the Mount. You know, things like, don't look at a woman lustfully because it's like committing adultery. If someone wants to take your shirt, give him your coat as well. If someone wants you to go a few yards, go a whole mile. And unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you're doomed. What chance is there to live up to these things that Jesus portrayed for us? These things are impossible for us. The ability to control the heart or the mind is not in us. As Dave said, it's the spirit of the power of the air that we wrestle against. We don't have a chance. That's why under grace, Jesus lives in us, through us, to carry out the intent of the law of love toward man and toward God. Not a law about things, but a law about being, a law about relationship. The favour, the power of God's Spirit is inclined to those who believe in his Son. That's his grace in action. There's this overlay of grace all through this message of the Sermon on the Mount. I know you can't do this stuff. This is the standard that we're striving for. There's no way we can live up to that. But that's the point. We can't, and we never will. One of life's greatest regrets for me, and there's not many, is that when I was 10 or 12, I had opportunity to learn the piano. I said no, because I thought it was for girls. When I was 10, I wasn't very smart. My mother would have engaged a tutor, and she would have incurred a debt that she would have paid on my behalf so I could learn the piano. And I would have been required to practice, to take the most of that opportunity that I've been given to learn this wonderful instrument. I would have had to practice. I would have made mistakes, but I would have had to keep practicing. All the practice that I would have done would have not have paid 1 cent of that debt that my mother had paid on my behalf. Not 1 cent. The debt was paid in full. No amount of practice is going to pay any part of that debt, because there's no debt left. So what's life about? It's about practicing. We're to practice being the people God called us to be and empowered us to be. Not under our own steam, but under his Spirit, under that tutor. Growing, learning, practicing, maturing, getting better at stuff. Learning to pick those thoughts more rapidly, more readily, more easily. When we falter, when we fall, when we fail, when we make a mess, it's okay. We're humbled. We remember that we're under his loving, merciful and gracious grace. Generous grace. The perfection that we're told to seek is already accomplished in Jesus, is what he's done and what he continues to do. That's why we endure to the end. We keep practicing. We keep making mistakes. I love the analogy of going skiing. If you're not falling over, you're not going fast enough. If we're not making mistakes, if we're not pushing the limits, pushing the boundaries and calling on God to help us more, we're not practicing hard enough. When we make mistakes, we make them with a clear conscience, not burdened by guilt or worry or dread, but with a joy of freedom and belonging to him who has died for us and now lives for us all. Grace is sufficient to cover not what we've done or not done, but who we are. My grace is enough to cover and sustain you. My power is made perfect in weakness. What does made perfect mean? or made complete, some might say. What do we send power out for? What do we expect when we expend energy to see a result, an intended result? What does God expect? His power is perfected when it accomplishes what he sends it to do. He invites us to participate in his salvation under his terms, not ours. Where does God find a home? In the proud and self-righteous? Amongst the rich and the powerful? He takes residence rather in the widow and her mite, in the man who can't speak to become his spokesman, in the humble and faithful who come in prayer with simple requests and thanks. God would much rather bless those who ask for a little that they can share than those who badger him for a lot for themselves. It's in the needy and the humble that God is most easily seen. And that's what he wants, to be seen through his people and their actions, so that work of salvation continues. That's his grace in action. So Paul was comfortable, boastful in his weakness, that God might be more expressed through him, that that power might be fulfilled and accomplish what he sent it to do. So it's obvious that it wasn't Paul doing the healing, the speaking, the encouraging. The grace of God was sufficient to do what needed doing and to be done through Paul, through this man who recognised his weaknesses and boasted in them so God could be glorified all the more. Jesus has done everything needed to make our salvation possible. Jesus is the only ticket, plus nothing. No tax, no surcharge, no booking fee, no stamp duty, nothing ever, just a free ticket. And the debt we've racked up and will continue to rack up on our spiritual tab is already paid for in full. Just like my piano lessons, already paid for. All I've got to do is practice and grasp that opportunity with both hands. So while we have nothing to do with regard to settling our account of sin, because Jesus has already done that, he's already paid for that debt, that account, God is busy transforming me, you, us, to be the people he destined us to be. We're not having this transformation done to us so much as done with us. And we participate in that transformation by practicing obedience, practicing humility, practicing trust, practicing faithfulness, practicing love, because of his Spirit that enables that process to take place in us. We have life more abundantly that way. We don't have more stuff or more money or more power or more authority, but he's called us to live on a higher plane that's based on love and not just on deeds. Not just on keeping a law of things, but a law of love toward man and toward God. When we broke the old covenant law, a priest had to offer a sacrifice on our behalf to make our way right with God again. Of course, Jesus is now that living high priest, making our way right with God once and for all. Guilt and remorse are meant to lead us back to God, not keep us away. That's the deception of Satan, that he wants to think we've broken this relationship that God has called us into. We want to stay away from God when we've made a mistake, but he wants us to come all the closer so we can fix it, so that grace can cover us all the more. We stay away because he thinks he doesn't want to know us, or is ashamed of us, or is angry at us. But that's not living under grace. That's the devil telling us we're not worthy. When he knows full and well what Jesus has done, he's made us worthy. And we're drawn back to God through prayer and through repentance to realise the forgiveness that is perpetually ours through Jesus. You see, the devil thinks he's doing evil in the world, and he is, but that's not the end of the matter. God has the power to turn that evil into good. That thorn, that suffering, that anguish, that loss, that complete and utter being perplexed and bewildered is something that's part of our physical human condition, but God uses it for good. He uses it part of that process of practicing, of making mistakes, of learning. Under our grace, our mistakes, our rebellion, our pride are all dealt with through Jesus Christ and his risen new life. There's a new Pixar film coming out these holidays, and people have been talking about the remarkable concept that it brings to young minds. And the concept is there's no point pursuing happiness because you're going to miss out and not find it. They try and express that happiness and suffering are inexplicably linked. You can't have one without the other. It's the suffering, it's the moments of sorrow that enable happiness to thrive and to find a place in our lives. If we just selfishly seek happiness, we'll never get there. And that's what God's called us to have this life that's mixed with suffering and the joy that he makes possible. We practice, we make mistakes, we're transformed. Not in spite of those things, but through them, because of them. Let me finish with Hebrews 4, verse 16. Let us therefore approach God's throne of grace with confidence, with boldness, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in our time of need.